Dan Kamen is here. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm very well, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing great. And Dan, have you ever seen Dan? How can you hear me okay? Too loud, too soft? We didn't get a chance to test everything. Dan is the consomme professional at broth and bouillon. The consummate professional.
Oh, we're in the soup now.
Yes.
I like the way you got out of that.
Yes,
there, too.
I've seen him working with Ben Taurine on the stage. See, got that. Dad, you might know as a great actor, historian, performing artist when it comes to mime and all sorts of motion. Magician, you should go to his website, Dan, K-A-M-I-N, dankamen.com, to learn more about him. I used to think it was Dank Amen, but it's Dan Kamen.
Well, it depends on how moist it is that day, you know. Sometimes I'm dank.
I'm being silly.
When I was on Fred Rogers' show, he used to call me K-Man with a dash.
K-Man, I like it.
Yeah.
The K-Man. You're here. There could be a million reasons you're here. But National Silent Movie Day is September 29th. And let me put this song on.
Smile, though your heart is breaking. Smile, even though it's aching.
Tell me a little bit about this song and why it's appropriate to associate it with National Silent Movie Day.
Well, if you want to make it a call-in quiz question, do you?
Sure.
So we could ask, who is the singer? And a second question would be, who is the composer?
Mm.
And I can tell you it was sung on at the very beginning of COVID by a celebrity singer, very famous singer, one of the most famous singers in the world, on the One World Together at Home. It was an online concert that was done to cheer people up as we were all so terrified when the extent of COVID really became clear, when the world virtually shut down over one weekend as the pandemic's power over us became clear.
So, Ricky, I just texted you the answer. Do you know who the composer is? Take a listen. And the singer.
I love the way she swings into that jazz finale of it. She's just playing by herself.
So if you could identify the composer and the singer. Phone us now. Ricky is able to check your answer, and you can earn a Saturday Light Brigade charge for doing so. The composer part should be evident, perhaps. The singer might surprise you. So National Silent Movie Day, it's a kick, and it's a good thing that it is present. What led to its founding?
It was founded by a Pittsburgh film preservationist and scholar. He used to work at the famous Eastman House in Rochester, where they do, of course, that's where the Eastman Kodak fame. That was the pioneer of manufacturing readily available camera film for everybody, the Brownie. There's a museum there where they preserve the legacy of film. And Chad Hunter of Pittsburgh, now of Pittsburgh, was one of the preservationists who did the scientific work of bringing back to life sometimes ancient films which had a tendency to deteriorate. Of course, they would wear out like other things do. And Chad, last year, decided there should be a National Silent Movie Day because he loves silent movies. That's what he worked, his lifetime work is preserving those. And it caught on, and it's all over the country now. And in fact, I'm going to turn your show into Miracle on 34th Street, because in Pittsburgh, National Silent Movie Day is going to be celebrated at three different theaters.
Wow.
The Row House Cinema is going to show a film called Don Juan, featuring the legendary leading man, the sort of leading man of history, John Barrymore, who was so handsome that when he started performing on stage, women would faint in the audience when he came up, and he thought something was going on. There was a pandemic going on in the and he realized finally that they were just so struck by his great physical beauty. In his time, he was called the Great Profile, but he was also a great dramatic and comic actor. And Don Juan was one of the first sound films, even though there are no words in it, it had recorded music on it.
It would be so interesting for people to hear his voice on stage after seeing him in silent films.
Well, and he became one of the big movie stars when sound films came in. And this was an early sound film, didn't have dialogue yet, but music. And it was, of course, about the legendary lover, appropriately enough, Don Juan. It was one of those instances where the person's characters on stage filtered into his what people thought of his life off stage. And in fact, he fulfilled that because he was married a number of times, many, many times. He was very funny, and he called each of his marriages his disastrous marriages. He referred to them as bus accidents. Not just a car wreck. It was two buses colliding.
Oh, my.
So that's going to be shown at Row House Theater, which is in Lawrenceville. The Jump Cut Theater is showing Salome, based on Oscar Wilde's sort of poem play about the biblical story of Salome and John the Baptist, and another film called The Seashell and the Clergyman, and that's at the Jump Cut Theater at the Parkway Theater. I'm sorry, Jump Cut Theater is the group that shows films at the Parkway Theater. And then finally, the Harris Theater, then we leave the Miracle on 34th Street, sending people to Gimbel's instead of Macy's part of the show, and we plug my show, which is at the Harris Theater. And I noticed that one of your guests who called earlier was a woman, a blind woman, and there's a very famous photograph of Helen Keller sitting with Charlie Chaplin, with her hands on his face to to feel what he looked like, because she couldn't understand. She couldn't go to a movie and see it. She was blind and deaf from a very young age, but she learned to communicate. And she wanted to meet Charlie Chaplin because she knew he was the funniest man in the world, because everybody talked about him, including the ways she would communicate with her great teacher, Annie Sullivan. And so there's a wonderful photograph of them meeting and sitting on a bench at Charlie's studio, and she's feeling his mustache on his face. And I'm going to do a show called Charlie Chaplin's Red Letter Days at the Harris. And I'm so glad you're having me on today, because people who go to movie theaters don't expect to see a live person there. They expect to see their favorite stars on screen in a movie. This is going to be a hybrid. There's going to be a movie, but there's going to be me introducing the movie fairly elaborately, using music like what we just heard, and using a lot of imagery, which I challenge the audience, just like you do, to interpret. Like, you know, I want to show, build a story of how Charlie Chaplin, as famous as the singer we just heard, as famous as Elton John, who performed here in Pittsburgh last night and jammed up traffic because he filled stadium, PNC Park, I believe, Charlie Chaplin dwarf them all in terms of his fame. And you don't have to take my word for it, because I'm going to prove it on Thursday night, September 29th, using evidence in the way that you use evidence in your show, with audio clips and with a lot of imagery too, such as a postcard that has a joke with a cartoon of Chaplin, which I'll challenge the audience to find out, to analyze, to decode or unpack, whatever you want to call it, what the joke is. Because some jokes, you have to
think.
Well, you know they've faded with time, and you get the joke, but it's not so funny, except Charlie Chaplin's jokes, which is why we still really watch and care about him because he's still funny over 100 years later.
This is Dan Kamen, and let me congratulate Jim and Blackridge, who came up with Lady Gaga. That's who was singing that version of Smile. And Charlie Chaplin, the composer, also a guess of Doris Day from Carrie. And that's a good guess. And it shows you how timeless Lady Gaga's voice is to be compared with Doris Day.
And if you see it on that concert, she's playing the piano herself in her home. And I love the way she takes Smile, the great Charlie Chaplin song, and jazzes it up because it's part of that. It was part of that One World Together at Home concert where the artists were reaching out. I don't know if you saw any of the kids from the Berklee School of Music who sang "It's a Beautiful World." What was the song they sang? Yeah,
I think it was that.
Yeah, and so moving. You know, cutting from one of the student musicians to another, playing and singing that song, and it really did give us a message of how it's time to come together in the world.
With all the emphasis on mindfulness, I now have decided I just have about an hour-long memory tape in my head, and it erases every hour, so I can always be present. Sometimes it's only a minute, and it just, so I can't remember things like that anymore. I do remember this song, which is a good example of just how popular Charlie Chaplin still is and was.
The family next door to me is very, very sad. From picture plays has got to raise a Charlie Chaplin man. The youngest son, he's forced to fund the Charlie Chaplin pain, and wears a funny looking bowler on his little brain. They're absolutely dotty, there's no doubt, and nicely when the family talks loud, they all do the Charlie Chaplin walk, the Charlie Chaplin walk.
And this is believed to be from about 1916.
It is from 1916, and by that time he had been making movies for just a little over a year and a half, 2 years, and everybody in the world was imitating him. Everybody wanted to be him. If you were a guy, you wanted to be him. If you were a girl, you wanted him to chase you. Because he was just the coolest and funniest thing in the world. And he was famous in a way that nobody else had ever been famous in history, because movies went everywhere that they had electricity, literally. And even when the camera, the motion picture camera itself was hand cranked, you still need a projection, you know, you need electricity with an electric bulb although the early ones were literally a flame behind the film, a gaslight.
Yeah, the magic lanterns.
The magic lantern slides were often powered by gaslights, by a candle, basically.
So the film you'll be presenting is Red Letter Days, is that correct?
It's not. There's a reason why it's called that, that people will find out when they go. I'll reveal that. But really the show is about the fact that Charlie Chaplin was becoming the richest actor in history. He already was by 1916. And he risked all of his fame, all of his fortune, his tremendous popularity, because at the same time Charlie Chaplin made the world explode in laughter, the bombs exploded that began World War I.
I watched the trailer, which we've linked to, called Charlie Chaplin's Red Letter Days, or the preview, perhaps it is, for the show.
Yeah.
Showing him is quite a patriot, encouraging people to buy war bonds.
Well, that was later, but at first, his popularity was such that he was cheering up. I just got a wonderful picture from a magazine cover of newspaper, the London Illustrated News, and the cover is people in a hospital lying on their beds flat, and a Charlie Chaplin film being projected on the ceiling, and everybody's laughing, including the nurses looking up. And that's, you know, one of the things I'll be showing as evidence of Chaplin's great fame. But he risked it all, you see, by deciding, well, I want to do something about the war. And one of the things he did was he helped finance it by going out on war bond tours, where he sold, in 3 weeks, he barnstormed the South and sold the equivalent of close to $1 billion in today's money of people paying their pennies and nickels. But the crowds that turned out to see him were astronomical. I mean, they were like 50,000 people would turn out for a chance to see him on Wall Street when he came to Wall Street and had a megaphone. All he had was audio, was a megaphone. They couldn't hear him, but they wanted to be in his presence. And when I say he was the biggest, it was a commonplace then that he was the most famous person not only in the world, but who had ever lived, because of the nature of movies. And to see him in person was like seeing the genie, you know, the Aladdin who had released the genie. And people filled the stadium to see Elton John last night. I can tell you they did not go to the airport. Some fans might have found out when his plane's private jet was landing. But when Charlie Chaplin would arrive in a city, there would be, when he came back to England, where he was born, about 1921, he returned to England, the crowds that turned out to greet him, not to see him perform, just to see him get off the train and the boat, were, compared to Armistice Day, the size of the crowds.
It's so amazing.
It was unbelievable, and I'm using proof, documentary proof, to show so that you don't have to take my word for it or read it in a history. You'll see that in newsreel footage that I'll show, and and in the evidence of these humble artifacts of popular culture, like cartoons that appeared on penny postcards or magazines, you'll see the tremendous impact he had. And he risked it all by making a comedy about a war that was still going on. And nobody had ever done anything like that before.
No, that was very, would be very bold and very risky, talking about the sensitivities of people. I mean, this is a different era, and the idea of lampooning something as serious as war, doing it intelligently, and wondering if people are going to catch the nuances of what you're doing.
Well, wondering if somebody's going to simply say, this is not funny. You can't let, there has been no comedy about 9/11. There have been films about it, a lot of them, and books about it, but there's been no comedy. And it's too close. And in World War I was a bloodbath. I mean, and it was followed immediately by a massive pandemic that has eerie parallels to our own pandemic and the reactions to it. So Charlie Chaplin has a way of becoming part of the consciousness, the zeitgeist, as people say, of what's going on in the world. The pandemic, I will show in this thing an ad, an open letter to Charlie Chaplin from a theater owner. It's published in a theater trade magazine, a magazine for movie exhibitors, people who own movie theaters, thanking Charlie Chaplin because his war film, Shoulder Arms, was so funny that people were risking their lives by coming out during the pandemic and filling the theaters despite the warnings of the health authorities to stay at home, avoid crowds, wear masks, don't. Does it sound familiar?
Yeah. Wow. So Charlie Chaplin's Red Letter Days will have Dan Kamen, who you're hearing right now, at the Harris Theater, September 29th, 7:30. You'll be presenting on the big screen some artifacts and newsreels you mentioned, which I think is great to be able to see those in context. And submitting the proof, if you will, about the power and impact of Charlie Chaplin.
And the main event of the evening is a complete, it hasn't been seen by anybody yet because I assembled it from film archives all over the world and private collectors, a complete restored print of that film that he made, which was called Shoulder Arms. The comedy he made, it's about 40 minutes long, about World War I, while World War I was still happening. It came out in October towards the end of the war, but still, the American troops were all over there, and there were still people dying in the trenches. And it's an amazing film. It doesn't stint on showing what everybody by then knew were the horrors, the filth of the trenches. People were dying not just from the gunfire and the bombs and the mustard gas, but from disease, because the trenches were filthy. And the first thing he does, one of the first things he does when he walks into the trenches, was to nail up a cheese grater on the wall, and then scratch his back. And that's a joke we don't get today in the same way, but everybody by then knew that the trenches were infested with lice.
I was going to say the itchiness of the bugs and lice if you're scratching your back.
Everybody came back with diseases and, you know, infections in their feet and because of the dampness and the flooding. And all of that is dealt with. The fear, the loneliness. It's a film that is as... It somehow turns the appalling aspects of that war into hilarious comedy that was the funniest to the soldiers themselves. So rather than ending his career, it actually brought cinema to a new level. It edged it up a notch.
And this is a silent film still, right?
It's a totally silent film made in 1918.
Wow. This is called When the Moon Shines Bright on Charlie Chaplin. This is another oldie, isn't it?
It was, yes. This came out in 1916. And when it's about, well, it's about, this is what soldiers sang as they were marching. They used it as a marching song.
Let's listen for a second.
And his little baggage trousers, they want mending.
Another quiz question. What were the Dardanelles? Where were the Dardanelles and what were they?
Were they mountains? I don't know.
See if any of your listeners, if you want to.
Sure. If you know what the Dardanelles are or were, I know them as... it used to be a bunch of newspapers, part of the Dardanelle newspaper chain.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, years ago, all the suburban newspapers, they became gateway publications, and I think they were eventually acquired by the Tribune Review, but they were called Dardanelle publications for years.
Hmm.
So, we just have about a minute or two left. We will make sure that we supply the answer to that. This is going to be a lot of fun. And it's all part of National Silent Movie Day. Are you going to go on the road with this presentation? Or?
Well, as a matter of fact, the new print of Shoulder Arms and my current presentation of this program will debut next Saturday, a week from today, in Farmington, New Mexico. And then I'll come back to do it on Thursday, the 29th of September, at our own Harris Theater, right downtown, next to Liberty Magic. And there'll be some celebrity guests. I can't reveal who they are.
I just wonder. I can think of who a few might be, but I don't want to start any rumors. So the Dardanelles, what were they?
Dardanelles was, the Strait of Dardanelles was the site of one of the most disastrous military expeditions, battles. It lasted almost for a year. It was the body of water off Turkey, and the Allied forces were trying to fight the other powers, Germany and the other powers, and about 500,000 people were injured, and a lot of them were killed, and it was a military disaster.
What a great way to learn more about history and its intersection with pop culture and really with all of the country and the world. Dan Kamen, September 29th. He might do a magic trick or two for you if you ask him after the show.
I actually do a little bit during the show, because to me, Charlie Chaplin is like magic. That's what inspired me. It's his comedy. It's so magical. This song we're listening to is Arlo Guthrie singing one of Chaplin's last compositions that he made for an unfinished film. And I love you.
There's more in you to love. And yet, I just don't know how I could love you more than I do right now. They say that love grows cold, but our love turned to gold.
What a superstar. Writer, actor, philanthropist, composer.
Yeah, it was an embarrassment of riches, truly, and he spent the last 20 years of his life composing scores for his silent films, such as Shoulder Arms, and wonderful scores, and we'll, you know, we'll hear that in the program.
I knew this was going to fly by. Dan, thank you
Larry,
for being with us.
I love talking with you, and I love your show, and keep up the wonderful work. You are a shining gem, a shining star in our firmament here in Pittsburgh and everywhere your show goes.
Well, ditto.
Thanks to you and to Ricky.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Kamen, and follow up. If you go to dankamen.com, that's probably the best place to go. D-A-N, you knew that. K-A-M-I-N.com. Check out the other things he's doing, too. Dan is a gem right here in Pittsburgh, but known throughout the world, too, for all the work he's done. And make sure you check out Charlie Chaplin's Red Letter Days, September 29th, 7:30.